Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, or afternoon, or whenever you're going to be watching this.
It's
5 o'clock our movie.
Somewhere.
5 o'clock somewhere. And welcome to the DLN Commentary Watch. Today we will be watching The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane. This is available on Amazon Prime for free. So, you know, as you get yourself ready to watch it with us, I'd like to introduce first my co-host and bubbly personality, and that would be Rachel.
Bubbles!
And with us, and we are so glad he's with us today, we got Doc Sludge, otherwise known as Eric. Say hello, Doc.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's been a crazy, interesting day. That's faux show. So definitely looking forward to this masterpiece, he says with air quotes.
Well, actually, this is a really good film. Now, just to give everybody a basic point of view, we need to at least let you know there are some triggers. Okay? We have a episode of animal violence, brief but definitely nasty. We have one of the main characters is a pedophile. We have murders. We have implied nudity of a 13-year-old girl, which was actually done by her older sister. And this was originally when it came out in the 70s, rated PG. Now, Rachel and I were talking about this. So, Rachel, if this were made today, what would be the rating?
Well, currently, if you look at it on Amazon, it's just NR. But if this was remade today, considering our proclivity towards the more extreme, this would definitely be an NC-17 movie, because I don't think that the, you know, butt shot of a 13-year-old girl would have stopped there. But also considering some of the themes of the movie and that, yeah, the main, well, not the main character, but the main antagonist in the movie is a pedophile, a blatant pedophile. Yeah, this would definitely be at least an NC-17 if it was even allowed to be remade today.
Yes, and this tells you a little something about the culture in the 70s. Now, the movie is not exploitative. It's more psychological. But it is, I mean, from the get-go, it's unsettling and disturbing. So we do want people to know that before they go into this. Okay. However, I will say that this is a really good movie without the air quotes. It really is. And it's been one of my favorites. And I think the acting is just phenomenal, and we'll all get into it as we watch it. So Doc, you're our virgin on this. You have not seen this. So are you looking forward to this, or are you scared to watch it?
Well, I've seen some stuff in my history. It's kind of hard to really kind of throw me off or shock and awe type thing. But this movie is quite legendary. It's right up there with it's from what I've heard. It's almost like Lolita-ish, but you know, a little bit more edgy than that. But yeah, I've heard about Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane many, many times. It's been mentioned in a lot of cult film books that I've read. Also, I think it's been mentioned at least once on some of those most disturbing films ever made type YouTube videos and stuff. So, I mean, it's probably not going to leave a good taste in a lot of people's mouths, but you know what? That's the way, you know, cinema was in the 1970s. It could be brutal.
Oh yeah, and
brutal,
it was
and it's gritty.
No, I always say that the 70s is the most downbeat decade of film as the ice cream park truck goes by with its happy tune, but nonetheless. Now, I basically, right at the beginning of the film, I'm adjusting the volume right now, and now I'm basically like 2 seconds in, right where the MGM comes in.
I am.
All right?
I am at exactly 00.
You know,
I'm at zero one
here. So hold on just a second.
Just hit your left arrow button, and it should back you up straight to the beginning.
Right, it does. Okay, I'm right there.
All right,
okay.
So if we do the countdown.
Okay, so it's going to be 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then go. So
okay.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Done.
And we suggest
and
you have your, that you have your subtitles on, too.
Yes, yeah. We do suggest that because this is a very dialogue-driven movie. And I just want to say that while we're here for a second, some of the music in this movie is just gorgeous. Like, this whole intro scene, it's so pretty.
Yeah. Without a doubt. Without a doubt, it is gorgeous. Now, if you notice all the French names, this is a Canadian film. It's directed by Nicolas Gesner. And Denis Herroux, who's the co-producer here, also did a lot of co-producing for Cronenberg. This is a very, as I said, this is based on Larry Connick's novel. But it is, the director, basically this is the only film that you might know him from. Most of his stuff, at least a good portion of it, was in French for Canadian audiences. Well, look,
yeah,
it's a perfect
actually, isn't it beautiful?
They did a really good job of the restoration. I'll tell you, Vinegar Syndrome does an amazing job when they restore films. This looks fantastic.
Yeah. Does it not? Oh, my God. Like, I didn't even realize. I mean, I knew, but the colors are so fucking vibrant.
So she sings Happy Birthday in front of the mirror to herself.
Oh, that's a little loud. You know, I had we removed a zombie couch from my apartment earlier today, and then we put in a new couch, and I cannot find my remote controls. And the couches that we put, the original couch that we put on the side of the street, is gone. So it's going to be interesting.
Okay, notice what she's doing. She just smoked a cigarette before she opened the door. Okay, you need to turn that down a little bit.
I'm trying to find my remote control. And I had to buy the one goddamn TV that doesn't have any fucking buttons on it. Ugh.
It happens to the best of us. Oh, what a sleaze, dude. You don't celebrate Halloween anymore.
Don't hit the tree. Okay, Doc, you did need to do something with that.
I'm working on it. Yeah, the one TV that doesn't has no buttons on it besides power, and no, and the remote controls are probably in the couch. That's been taken away.
I understand. I bought a smart TV for the kids recently, and there's literally one button on it, and it took me like 3 months to figure it out.
So what we have here is basically the beginning of somewhat of a duel between these two people. You know,
because she's smart enough to know.
Oh, she's not. That's one thing. Jodie Foster is not stupid in this movie at all.
Her name is Rin. Yes. Rin is pretty good. She's amazing, but
so one of the interesting things about this film is that Jodie Foster herself cannot stand this film. She basically wants to wipe the memory away. And I think perhaps part of that. Oh, there he is.
Here's Gordon.
Yep. So anyway, one of the things that I really think the reason for is that this is a rough film. And now, she had done rough films. She just came from Taxi Driver, for God's sake, which has some of the same themes in a lot of ways. And it's more exploitative. But this is just, you know, notice how he's getting close to her. It's just creepy as fuck.
The way he's saying things, the way he touched her arms when she handed him the cake, just... You know, pretty eyes, pretty hair. Ugh.
Yeah, this is tough.
Yeah, don't be silly. Oh, okay, bye. Look at the time. I didn't even have a watch on, you know.
I love where this was filmed. I'd like to go vacation in this place.
Right? Especially because apparently you'll find out later that, you know, the house, they're leasing it for 3 years, but it's apparently been furnished already for the most part. So, fuck yeah, I'll go vacation there. Cool. Look at that. He's trying to, like, already creep and give her rides. He's already following her.
Yeah.
Creepy son of a bitch.
So she's doing all her banking?
Yeah, Yeah, this is the part in the movie where I figured out something was seriously up, and I did figure out what was going on, but I'm not going to say anything. But the way she talks to these people, like, I know, I've done this before. Fuck off,
yep.
Pretty much. Give me my shit and shut it, lady.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think that this could happen, but I think it could only happen in the 70s. I don't think today that this plot would be feasible. What do you think, Rachel? You've seen this now.
Now, I'm sorry. Give me 2 seconds. Repeat yourself because my brain just, like, lapsed.
I don't think
okay,
it could be made today.
Yeah. But the plot itself, I think, wouldn't work too well. Now, who we have
now,
here is Alexis Smith. Alexis Smith, I'm going to get up her IMDb here in a moment. But very, very fine actress.
Fucking perfect for this role. She's gorgeous
awesome.
At it.
And the thing is, the way that she acts, you can see, you know, the relationship between her and Martin Sheen, her being the mother.
Oh, absolutely. And you definitely see the protective mother, like
right.
as any mother is wont to be, as it were.
Now, Alexis Smith has been in a number of films. She, one of the big ones near the end of her career was she was in The Age of Innocence, the Scorsese film. But she goes back to at least the early 60s. She died in 1993, born in 1921. Her last film was The Age of Innocence. She was on Dallas and did a lot of Love Boats, Casey's Shadow, The Little Girl Who Lived Down the Lane, Once Is Not Enough. She was more of a theater person. And she was also Canadian.
Well, I just want to say really quick, this is the scene where you see what a controlling animal this woman really is. I mean, it's
oh,
her first scene in the movie, and she just walks in and starts going, this is supposed to go over here, this belongs here, moving shit. Like, dude, Ren literally had that table next to her and the phonograph or whatever because she was using it for work. And this lady just walks in, immediately starts, this goes 3 inches to the left, this goes right here, this goes... And what a controlling individual she is really comes into play in this movie.
Yeah. And she plays it really well.
So fucking smooth.
Oh, yeah. Learning Hebrew.
I like
it that it's Hebrew as opposed to Italian or that sort of thing. I do have this thing with Jewish, the Jewish culture big time.
Well, there is a point later that it just now connected for me, and I don't know why, but there is a point later where she says something about the wine, the thick, sweet wine that your people tend to enjoy, and I'm like, why does she think this blonde chick is a... Oh. It suddenly made
right.
sense. She was fucking doing Hebrew in the beginning.
Well, by the way, the
so
name
awesome.
Of that wine is Manischewitz, which is one of the biggest Jewish... food corporations in the world.
I actually know this from having worked in the liquor for so long, but yeah, as soon as she said that thick, sweet wine that your people like, my head went to, why does she think this, like, Aryan-looking chick is Jewish? And, again, just now, it took me about 24 hours, but it clicked in my brain. I mean, I got the show.
Everything is connected here. And as you go through it, now, I haven't watched this movie in a number of years, but I know it like the back of my hand. You know, the other thing is, you know, do they sexualize her? Which is a really good question.
I will be the expert on that, and I will tell you right now that I do not believe 0% is she sexualized, okay? Because, A, if she was sexualized, they wouldn't put her in caftans the entire movie.
Right, or sweaters like this.
Well, exactly,
right?
And that's pretty much the only time in the movie, I think, that she wears anything other than, like, she's wearing, you know, regular pants and a sweater, a coat over it, or she's wearing a caftan the entire movie. There is nothing sexual about the way that they've dressed her. There is nothing sexually proclivative about the way she acts towards people. I mean, if you look at it, she just opened the front fucking door, and this guy's, like, all up on her.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but I don't know if anybody has ever thought that a shapeless floor-length dress is sexy. I mean, maybe that's your thing. Maybe you're into geometry or something, but no. I don't feel like she was sexualized in this movie.
You're starting
all.
To break up, my dear.
I'm not sure why. By the way, I don't think she was sexualized.
You know what? Call back in. Call back in.
All right.
Carl, you're sounding really bad, too.
Yeah, you're doing it, too. I don't know why. How about me? Am I doing it?
I can barely understand you. Let me see if I can get into the studio and see what if I can do anything.
Yeah, we're having some difficulties here, guys. Give us a second.
Yay.
Okay, Rachel, you're back.
I know, I am.
Okay, something's going on here because you both sound really bad. I'm going to open up the studio.
You know what?
Here.
We may have to restart this shit.
Yeah.
What? Can you hear me or not? Am I breaking up?
I'm going to disconnect. Then I'm going to call back in and I'll see if that works.
Okay, try calling back. I'm going to do the same thing.
Hello. Hello again.
Okay, that's good.
That sounds
a lot
better.
How about us?
That sounds a lot better.
Yeah, there we go.
Okay, so I personally haven't had any problems with you guys' phone calls, so I guess fuck your phone service. None of us paused the movie, did we?
Or Blog Talk, you know. Hey, it happens, guys. Now, this guy is Mort Schumann. And I love him. He's one of my favorite characters in this.
He's actually the best character in this movie, honestly, as far as morality-wise, and that he's not the shittiest human in this town.
Yep. Snigliorti. Now, Mort Schumann did act a little bit, but he was more of a musician, and he was a songwriter. Best known as a songwriter, he wrote In the Ghetto for
Elvis.
Elvis. He also was well known as for singing and introducing the French songwriter Jacques Brel. But he wrote a lot with a guy by the name of Doc Pomus. He had songs that were recorded by the Flamingos, Andy Williams, Bobby Darin, Fabian, and the most famous song is A Teenager in Love, Save the Last Dance for Me, Little Sister, Can't Get Used to Losing You, Viva Las Vegas. You know, so, I mean, this guy was big. He also did Small Faces, Sha-La-La-La-Lee. He did Here I Go Again by the Hollies. I mean, this is just an amazing song. And during the 50s, probably just under Lieber and Stoller.
And if you know anything about being a kid at home, possibly alone, she is doing the exact perfect thing to deflect this dude.
Yeah.
Shut up and take my money.
Oh, by the way, I found my remote control.
Oh, good.
It was indeed... in the couch, well, the part of the couch that's still sitting on the side of the road.
That's so, a good thing.
Oh,
you don't need to get a
new
one.
Oh, my God,
you
had to go all the
way out? Yeah. So that worked out pretty
good.
Best
thing I've ever done to one of my exes, when I left, I took all of the charging ports for all of their video game controllers, because they didn't have any cables. I took all of the charging ports and the remotes out of the house.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So
I
here she comes again.
Yeah. This is where you're starting to think that maybe Dad's not in the picture. Like, if you haven't figured it out already, we don't think Dad's around, because that's his office. That's his supposedly locked study that she just walked into.
Right.
But I love how nebulous this movie leaves a lot of things, too. Like,
uh-huh.
Do we know that Dad's not actually around? Or is he really a recluse? Like, and why the fuck does this woman just keep walking up in the house? What is this, like the third time?
Second.
Oh, yeah. This
but then again, her son came in first. So the Hallets are not nice people. And, of course, you know, Officer Medicaliori said, you know, don't let her hassle you. and basically said that her son was a pervert. So, yeah.
He didn't say it outright,
so
but he
well
said
known.
Don't.
It's yeah. well known around town. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, because the first thing that Migliorati said was, you're not by yourself, are you? Like, don't be by yourself. Also, keep your porch light on. And even mom tells the girl, first meeting, doesn't even know this bitch. Well, I mean, they met once, I guess, during the leasing. But even in the first meeting, the mom was like, so maybe next time he comes over to see your dad, don't let my son into your house. So it's
yeah.
not just well known. It is an established fact that
fact.
This dude is a pedophile. Because I guarantee you she knew there weren't any grapes out there. Do you know how long it takes to cultivate grapes? It's not
yeah,
that there
really.
Aren't grapes because nobody bothered to spray. God, my old babysitter used to grow grapes. She was using that as an excuse to come into the house and be like, hey, don't be around my creepy fucking son. Also, I run this shit.
Yep. Yeah, and there's a lot of, manipulation and tribe manipulation between her and of course, the son, too.
There's nothing but innuendo in this movie, and I am totally here for it. And by the way, this ends up being one of my favorite scenes in the movie just because of the line towards the end of it. And, Carl, you know what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're saying. So when it happens, you got to tell us. But one of the things you could tell is that Jodie Foster is handling this. She knows.
Oh, she's got this on lock, okay? She knows what the fuck is up.
Yeah.
How is it an affair if they weren't married?
My house!
My house! So I think that you're actually further than... There we go.
Yeah, maybe just a little bit.
Because she just screamed my house, but that's not the best part. It's here in a second. When she just defiantly, like, yeah. Oh, poor you. Totally not worthless. I drink water out of one of those, like, every day.
So
yeah,
you know,
that
some sensation other than Mrs. Hallett.
And the jelly jars?
Yeah, what's in the
and
jelly
now
jars?
And Mrs. Hallett?
Yeah. Now, there still is not a major character introduced yet. And he will be introduced shortly.
Yeah, and I love him to death, too. He's probably the best ride-or-die bitch I've ever seen in a movie. I just have to say that in advance.
Agreed. And when he shows up, I'll say something else about him, too, which I love.
But my favorite line in the movie... And just, you can really see her acting chops is not when she's screaming at her, but she just stands there and goes, this is my house. And it just, oh, it resonates. Also, there's a
yep.
bitch in the cellar, but whatever. that had just happened. Damn,
she really just shrugged that right off.
Yeah.
And you have to wonder why.
And that's part of it, too.
Well, that's part of what's so great about this movie is this is, honestly, this is a fantastic film. It's not as good for a commentary watch because it is very slow, low, and atmospheric. So here she's seeing, you know, like the people go to the ball game or whatever. So she realizes that the town is vacant, but there's this distinctive Bentley here. God, that is such a pretty car. And, oh, it's so weird. Nobody in the 70s locked their doors, but whatever. I don't know, guys. I wasn't around then. Did they even have car locks in the 70s?
Oh, of course they did. Come on.
I'm fucking with you dinosaurs. Come on now.
Well, in small, back in the 70s and early 80s, in small towns, you never locked your doors, and I can verify that. Because the little town that we lived in, you know, like called Franklin, New York, way, way back in the Catskills, man, there was like everybody knew everybody, and just it was safe. We think it was safe, or remembered to be, I don't know.
Well, right, and that's why Migliorti had to tell her, like, oh, no, no, we don't, that, we haven't even talked about that yet. That hasn't happened. Or, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, the porch light, that's all I have to say. I don't think we've got the porch light yet. Yeah, she's so, so brilliant in this movie. But then it comes down to it, and they do have moments that remind you that as brilliant as she is, she's still a 13-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Like here, the first thing I thought was, like, does she even know how to drive? And frankly, I feel like the reason that she's not able to get the car started is she probably has no idea how a clutch fucking works, but... My boy!
Did I get Mr. Magic on the way?
Fuck yeah! It's Mario, yo. It's my man.
As in, like, Mario and Luigi?
Yep.
You know, I'm not sure if he has a brother or not. I can't remember if they discussed that in the movie. We don't know if he goes on to become a plumber in the future or not.
it's me, Mario. He seems to be about the right age to become a plumber in the early to mid-80s.
And then she jumps out of the car. Uh-oh, you found a princess. Ranch, she in another house. Go away. And that is the culmination of every Mario game ever.
Remember, kids, funguses, some funguses are bad for you.
Now, notice something about Mario. Okay, notice how he walks. Okay? It's not really mentioned until later. But he has a physical disability. The interesting thing about this movie, and there are only a couple of films where someone has a physical disability and it's not really focused on, right? And this is important for someone like me who had a physical difficulty when he was young and was in braces, and to see someone like this as a sympathetic character who can basically take care of himself, that's a good thing.
It really is. Mm-hmm. And towards the end, or at the end, you know, I'll talk about what made this movie really sympathetic for me. But yeah, actually, I was watching it the other day, and somebody came into the room, and they were like, oh, what, he's got a bum leg, but he can ride a bike? And I was like, oh, what, you got a bum brain, but you still got a job? Come on, fuckers.
Yeah. Exactly.
By the way, she did just such a gorgeous setup here. That dinner looks amazing.
And there's her captain.
She was wearing one earlier, too.
Yeah.
So I do have to say that yeah, see, that's the second one, time she's been wearing it in the movie. So basically, people in the 70s, if you were, I guess, in a weird hippie family like mine, they wore those as, like, robes. Just over your night gear and kind of to wander around the house, and that was loungewear. I do personally have a few caftans still. I'm not from the 70s. I just have a weird family, and I have almost an exact duplicate of the one that she wears in the end of the movie, which I dug out of my costume box and would still be wearing, but it's really hot here in Arkansas right now, and that polyester does not fucking breathe.
Yep.
And just the little moments like that where she notices his struggling and
yep.
just kind of like, it's like beautiful human moments.
And this young actor is really good, too. He's very good in this.
I think she actually just said what the whole point of this movie is. She just said, how old do you have to be before people start to treat you like a person?
Yeah.
And here we are starting to recognize that she's still just a dumb 13-year-old kid.
Yeah.
He's like, you didn't think about this shit? Like, right.
And he's smart, too. And, of course, what you're finding here is that the two of them bond and help each other out. Because, to be honest, she needs somebody like that. Right?
She does. She needs somebody at all, and she doesn't have that.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is, like, you're getting the feeling at this point that Mario already knows what happened to Mrs. Hallett, okay? Like, ain't no reason this girl living alone in the woods is going to need some random stranger to move the town, you know, lady's car off of her property if something fucked up didn't just go down.
Yeah.
The thing I love about Mario is that he is here for it. He is totally down. He's not trying to do this girl. He's just like, cool. Like, we're the weirdos in the town. Let's roll.
Yeah, exactly. And that's part of it, too. I mean, you know, when I was younger, it was the weirdos. I mean, I always say that you find your own family by who you really are, right? And so you all, you know, congregate together, find each other. And these two find each other.
Because she's so worldly and gives zero fucks if there's something, like, physically wrong with him. Because her father's this famous poet. She's been to Morocco. She's been to all these places. And she doesn't care. She just wants people to leave her the fuck alone, and I'm pretty sure he does too.
Yeah. And that's very true. Trust me, that's extremely true. I wanted people to leave me the fuck alone.
Hey, me too. Growing up as the weirdo in a very small southern town, I understand completely.
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
Same here.
Again, this movie takes its time in terms of not only establishing the characters, but establishing the relationships.
I think it takes the perfect amount of time to do that, though, because once you see how it all breaks down, it just, chef's kiss. It's beautiful.
And yeah, Mary fucking Poppins, okay, and it's a PG movie. I'm just saying.
'70s PG, you need to clarify, because this is not PG right now.
No, not even close. Not even close. And there is a difference between '70s PG and everyone else. I smell any grass. Now, you got to admit, that's got to be a great relationship, father and son relationship. And look at that damn jacket he's wearing. God, it's ugly.
God, it screams 70s.
It's uncle and nephew, by the way. That's
who uncle and nephew. That's right.
But yeah. I don't know why you're talking about the god-awful jacket when you haven't seen that horrendous tie. Jesus Christ! Burning my retinas.
Okay, I'm going to just say something that everyone should notice if they're watching the 70s film. The fashion of the 70s really fucking sucked. Seriously.
Oh, they tried to bring it back. Jesus Christ.
You know, I mean, listen, the 70s, they made us wear something called bell bottoms that almost guaranteed you would never get fucking laid. I'm just saying.
And now bell bottoms came back for a little while, and they're still staying the same thing. You're never going to get laid in those.
I don't know. I'm a girl. I'm pretty sure I could put whatever I wanted to on my bottom half and people wouldn't care, but... doesn't mean they're the prettiest pants out there, I'm just going to say. And by the way, guys, we've been talking through this, but in case anybody's not paying enough attention, this is the part where they absolutely confirm that Mr. Hallett is a pedophile, because Migliarti here actually tried to pulled him out of some bushes trying to rape a couple little girls and tried to prosecute him for it, and Mom covers it all up.
Mom's dead, so I think we can, we'll try and get that taken care of.
Well, we're going to work on it, but Yeah, so, like, the whole town knows about it, but since this woman runs the town, she's been, well, what did she do with her son? She married him off to some cocktail waitress that already had a couple of kids. There you go. He's a normal guy who's got a wife and kids that are boys, obviously. So, I'm really glad that he didn't have daughters in this movie, because that would have taken it to a whole deeper level.
Yeah. Oh, here he comes again. And each time he comes, it gets worse and worse.
Oh, God, it does. I mean, you think birthday spankings are bad. Just you wait, buddies.
Now, at the end of this is where, well, I'll wait. But this is a great scene.
It is
Good
a great
God.
Scene. And, yeah, just keep watching. I've actually got the thing. I know exactly when it happens, Carl.
Yeah. And what the best line in the whole movie is coming up, by far.
Mm-hmm.
Notice how he is, like, making sure he's between, Mario is between them.
Mario is so fucking protective. This is the scene right here with a trigger warning that we told you guys about earlier. You're going to need to avert your eyes for about 30 to 45 seconds if you can't handle this kind of fucked up-ness.
And you do see the dead hamster there. Oh.
He's not dead yet.
Yeah.
So there you go. That had just happened.
I am not liking that character very much at all.
You're not supposed to.
Oh, that's what it took?
Oh,
yeah,
no,
really?
No. There's more than that, but this is the point where I would just, oh, I don't know, put my size 4'15 steel tips up his ass and with a twist.
Well, wait
right.
until you see something here. This is something.
This isn't where it happens, but I know what you're talking about.
Well, the same thing could be said about you, you fucker. Don't you know any girls your own age?
Yeah.
Now, I want you to think about this. Can you tell me any other role that Martin Sheen played that is so despicable?
We'll talk about that at the end of the movie, because if you want to use the word despicable, we have to get there first. But he did just murder a hamster.
There's one.
Yeah.
There's one other role. But remember this, he was president of the United States on the West Wing. I wondered if anybody knew this role when they hired him. Seriously.
I hope that they did, because this shows what an amazing actor he is.
Yeah.
God, it's still so weird for me to see, like, a young, kind of sexy-looking Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
Although it makes me feel real weird to say that about him in this movie specifically, because, cringe, but...
Well, then you should see Badlands, okay?
You what?
You should see Badlands, too.
Okay, well, if you're going to make me think another pedophile dude is sexy or something, then you just get right the fuck out of here.
No. He's a serial killer in that one.
Oh, that's fun. Does he murder children and hamsters?
No.
All right, we're good. I mean, come on. I'm an American white woman, like, isn't that what we do in our spare time? Like, secretly lust after serial killers and watch
murder porn
documentaries?
Watch Carrie Knives, right?
Right? God, he's such a badass in this movie. I love this shit. Are you seeing it, Eric? Are you seeing this?
Oh, yeah. I'm seeing it.
Oh, my God. This is so beautiful. Also, I have an Italian stepfather, and we do lovingly call him our big dumb Dago, because he's actually a really smart man. And his last name is Dago ties into his last name. So, don't say shit like that to people. Don't use racial.
Well, you know, again, you're talking about a film in the 70s that will use that. You know,
well, exactly,
I mean,
that's how people
we talk about the N-word, okay, but there's the Italians, you know, Polak. They're all trigger words.
They are.
You know? And we forget about that. We just think it's the N-word, because that's what everyone seems to be focused on right now, and I'm not saying they shouldn't be.
No, absolutely should be, because that's the one that we have an issue with now, like, and that we've had the most consistent issue with. But, you know, for people like my grandparents that came over here on the boat, you know, being called Dago and WAP and things like that, and being discriminated against just because they're from Italy. It's so stupid.
Go ahead, Doc.
Yeah, both sets of my grandparents, both the Italian side and Norwegian side, both came over in the early 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, you know, they had a lot of discrimination against them. And yeah, even back during World War II, I think, my grandparents were put into internment camps. And they still chugged it on every day and stayed strong and made it through.
Yeah.
That is awesome, man. Yeah. So does anybody else think that Mario is, like, a straight-up badass all of a sudden? Like, at first he's
definitely a badass.
And then he whips that shit out, and he's like, there you go. What? Fuck you, buddy. You know? Oh, my God. I just, that had me screaming when I saw it. It was just like, he whips that shit out, and I was like, ah! Yes! Sorry. Part of the reason why I had to see the movie before we watched it, because I totally would have had a shit fit if I saw that for the first time on the phone. Sorry. through all of this, it's like they work really well together. Just it just kind of happens. Like they fall in together, and suddenly it's like they know each other. But I've had friendships like that too. And
yep.
I get it. And this is where we finally find out what's going on, of course. You know, she's already shown him the bodies, and we figure out there was more than just Mrs. Hallett's body in the cellar.
Ooh, I had my phone too low. I missed it. Could you... How many bodies are down there? 2, 3, 5, 12?
3.
Three?
3 bodies.
Let me guess, her parents and that lady?
Mm-hmm. So this is the part where she's explaining the other two bodies. Because we know what happened to Mrs. Hallett, and obviously Mario figured it out. But she's telling her backstory right now with her sick dad who raised her to be a subversive, you know, hippie, fight the man, fuck the police, live on your own, don't let people tell you what to do. And he actually prepared everything for it. Because he knew he was going to die and she was going to be on her own. That's why she goes to the ocean all the time. Okay, so there's only 2 bodies down there, but she's explaining why there's a 3rd body in her life. It'd be nice.
So here you get the whole explanation of why she's alone. But what you don't get is, okay, her father taught her to be this independent. I mean, you even brought this up in a conversation yesterday. You know, is that a type of child abuse? You know, did the father do right by her by teaching her these things? And that's a good question.
Well, this is... Right here, this is, we need to get to the rest of the story because she's talking about mom now. And I found it really creepy that I painted my nails like this gorgeous French red yesterday. She makes good on the biscuit.
And the thing is, did she actually know what the powder was? More than likely, I think she did. Is she lying here? You don't know.
And that's the thing.
So everything's up in the air right now.
Well, she said she looked it up based on its properties. And that's where I think that she was, I don't want to go so far as to say brainwashed, but she was definitely... Her dad led her a very sheltered existence. And by sheltered, I don't mean kept her away from the world. I mean by sheltered, only let her see certain parts of the world and trained her to deal with the other parts. And so, I mean, right here, she just tells us that her father trained her before he died to kill her mother.
Yeah.
He gave her this bottle of white powder and said, if your mother ever comes, put this in here because it will calm her and make her less aggressive. And then she does that. But she did kind of indicate that maybe she had some kinky feelings about it because she lied initially and said that they didn't have anything to drink.
Right.
But yeah.
Exactly.
She she couldn't go against her training. This is the only thing that she's ever known, is this crazy dad dude that's like letting her smoke hash and all this other shit and gives her a bottle of fucking cyanide to give to his ex-wife. I mean, I really, all of that, Carl and I talked about that a lot yesterday. Is that a form of child abuse? Because I just, you don't know when a 13-year-old kid can fully, we know she knows what she's doing now. We don't know about the cyanide with the mom, but we know for a fact that she,
she knows exactly what she's doing.
Exactly what she's doing. And so he raised her to be like this. He prepared for it. That's, I don't know. I mean, that goes into some of that, like, prepper kind of territory, and I'm a very, very prepared person, and I will probably survive at least a few weeks in the zombie apocalypse. I have a lot of marketable skills. But wow.
That's always good to know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but this girl is basically the equivalent of having been raised in a fucking bunker. Just a very worldly bunker. And see? Porch light.
Yep.
And that's one of the things that I was saying really, really indicates, you know, because she does seem so grown in this movie. And they have to put a few things in there to remind us this is still a 13-year-old girl. Like, who the fuck doesn't know that you put your porch light on at night? I mean, come on.
Yep.
I'm going to put my porch light on here and where I am now when the pizza guy's coming.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only time.
Well, I have to put my porch light on out here, but I have an automatic one because we have crazy people in our neighborhood sometimes, and I live out in the woods. So we actually, the crazy drug addict neighbors, because they're nice. They're nice, you know. They'll wave at me and stuff when they're going to get their fix or whatever. They call us the bright light neighbors.
Well,
because we do. It's fucking automatic spotlight on the front porch. What was that?
Yeah, out here, unfortunately, if you leave your porch light out here or on out here too long, it may get shot out for you.
Yeah.
Well, we also don't have street lights out here, so it's kind of like if people don't have porch lights, they're probably going to, like, run into your house with a car because you can't see.
So what they're doing here is, like...
I mean, figure it out. They're digging a fucking hole.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah,
well, you know what they say. If you're going to bury a body, make sure you put some native plants over it so they can't dig back up.
Absolutely.
I thought the exact same thing yesterday. I was like, dude, they need to find like a redwood sapling or something. And I am so sorry, Carl. I didn't mean to cut you off a second ago. I think you had something to say about this, too.
That's okay.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a willing participant in this, maybe not in the murder, but the cover-up.
Oh, absolutely. He had nothing to do with the murder, but he has zero shit about, like, she hadn't even asked him to help her hide the bodies. I mean, she just asked him to move the car, but... I don't know. Maybe that was, like, their pillow talk or something. Hey, now that we're, like, closely connected, do you want to help me hide those bodies I just showed you? Or what's up with that? You know, I don't know. But he's very willing. And, I mean, that whole exchange. There were no words. It's like they were telepathically communicating, like those stupid Tostito commercials and shit. Like, they knew what was up. Like, yep, let's do this thing. Are you sure we're going to do this thing? Absolutely. Good. I was just making sure you were sure. And then they moved the rug, you know? And here in a minute, I have to make a comment that is going to harken back to this scene, and it's coming from my mother's heart, okay? He's coughing. They were out in that rain for so fucking long. I was so worried he was going to get sick.
Right.
I mean, when I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, my God, why don't they have raincoats? Why are they doing it in the rain? Jesus Christ, somebody's going to get really, really sick. This is dumb. Stop being dumb kids. Yay for hiding the body, says.
That's the mom instinct in you.
It is.
Absolutely.
I hate it. I hate it. Like, it's so deep within me with two kids that I literally wanted to, like, time machine back to Canada with a blanket for the dude.
Okay, what does the security camera say?
And you can tell that she's got this nurturing instinct because she was taking care of her father in his final days. Like, she knows how to take care of a sick person. Dad goes there. One of the things that the Nazis proved with some of their scientific experimentation is that the best way to rapidly elevate body heat is by having sex. So that's a thing you know now. If you're ever facing hypothermic conditions with somebody, you guys need to bone down.
So what's going on, Doc?
Oh, food just got here.
Oh, okay. That's always a good thing. Nothing wrong with that.
That is weird because the microwave just beeped with my food, too. We got some black market homemade tamales that are just a fucking die for.
Nice.
And I think that's another thing that they're trying to show in this movie is that, like, she may have been somewhat responsible for the deaths of a bunch of people, but she's not a bad person. Like, she's really genuinely caring individual. And she really cares about the rest of the world, leaving her the fuck alone.
Someone's just got to do what you got to do, you know? Oh, my gosh, there's literally a trail of pleather from my TV room to the hallway, to the stairs, down the stairs, on my front door. I gotta love old couches. Not really.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
It's Uncle Chucklefuck again. This is probably one of the best scenes in the movie, or
That's a great scene.
Nobody does. Honestly.
This is
fucking glorious. I love it.
And keep in mind the relationship here between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. Nah. There's old Daddy.
So, that was his nephew, of course. And
obviously.
Didn't realize with the limp and everything, it's really something.
Well, you notice he didn't really limp down the stairs. Like, he was...
No.
But also, she already told him he wasn't a well man. And that whole, he's so migliore. You know.
That mask sort of looks like the Toxic Avenger mask.
It does.
Here we go.
Nope. Yep.
And yeah, you see a little side boob there. Now that's not her. Okay?
That is not Jodie Foster. Just so you know.
No. No, that is her older sister. Keep that in mind. But if you take a look at that, you see side boob. That's not just...
I did notice that.
And it's PG, people.
I don't feel that was necessarily sexualizing because it wasn't shown in a way to be like, look at this hot little 13-year-old. It was more of a natural,
and that's
like...
the whole point with this, okay? This is why I brought this up earlier. Is there any sexualization? Okay? And there's not. This is done with such taste. Considering
exactly
the and with such restraint, you know, you don't see the violence, none of that. If you take a look at Gordon's death, you don't see it, but it's implied and it's extremely uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why I say, even from the beginning of this film, it's uncomfortable. It's, you know, this is really unsettling, this film.
It really is. I will agree there. No, I'm not going to lie. My computer just died. I've almost got it all the way back up. My computer being what I'm watching this movie on, but it is very fresh in my brain, so we can still keep talking about it. And maybe I'll get lucky and it continued playing. So what time stamp for you guys on?
Don't spill. Okay.
What was that?
Almost knocked over my drink there. Everything's fine though. About 1 hour and 15 minutes.
Okay, 1:15.
Yeah, I'm at 1:15:39.
Oh my God, the poor kid's in the hospital?
Yep.
Oh no.
There we go.
And he's in the hospital bed. She sees him.
Yep, I see him. I think we're right on the same thing. She's seeing him in the bed now. Oh, this was beautiful, too. Such a speech, man.
Yeah.
Does he have, like, pneumonia or something?
Yep.
Pneumonia.
Yeah, said it earlier.
They mentioned it.
That he has pneumonia.
I didn't catch it.
Oh. Yeah.
I can't work without you.
Exactly.
And the emotions are real here, you know?
Yeah,
you,
like,
you feel,
feel
her,
it.
And you feel, you know, even considering what has happened.
I mean, like I said, she was responsible partially for the deaths of a few people, but it's not even really her fault.
No.
None of it is.
Well, so far. But we can argue that, too, when it happens.
Right. We have argued it recently.
Yes, we have. The one thing to remember is how smart she is. You know, she's...
Oh, God,
and,
yeah.
And
and how far she's willing to go to continue living her life like she wants to live it.
Right. That is just a heartbreaking shot of a hamster cage.
I know. And I just have to mention again how beautiful this restoration is.
Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous.
Wait.
Yeah. come on now. You don't turn off your porch lights. Hmm. Something wicked this way comes, huh?
Absolutely.
Why is the rug moved? Because, you know, they've been, like, really, really good about cleaning up their tracks. So, obviously, you know some shit's about to go down.
Yep.
I mean, there's that whole trap door thing happening, but whatevs. Oh, my God. I'm buffering. This never happened.
So, are there deadites in the basement, or are we in the, or am I thinking about the wrong movie? He says jokingly.
Right?
Ash, I love you. Come here.
Oh, and that's the cat can I was talking about that I have an almost exact replica of. The only difference is mine has a hood on it. Uh-oh, what's happening? Green?
And here we go. God, I fucking hate him in this movie.
God,
we're supposed to, right?
The interesting thing is he doesn't really know. He suspects, but they got rid of the evidence. So he doesn't know. And he thinks he has the upper hand because he can blackmail her, which is what he's trying to do now, of course.
Yeah. Those are French red nails again. And the whole time, he's still super polite. Creepy son of a bitch.
Oh, yeah.
I hope he suffers.
Saved by the bell, what? Thank you.
Oh, dear. I don't think I like his interpretation of friends.
And she's got the special powder.
Okay. Carl knows what I'm going to say at the end of this movie. I have a very good argument about something here in the future. Red cup.
Red cup, blue cup. That's not a cup at all.
It's the Matrix.
Yep.
Maybe he'll die.
Oh, don't tell me the poison goes wrong.
That's another thing about, you know, you mentioned earlier the score, the classical music, too, that they use.
Oh, it's gorgeous,
it
yeah.
It's really good, too.
Almond cookies.
Checks, I didn't.
And never get into a land war with a Sicilian.
I was just thinking that.
Inconceivable.
Yeah, none of your little tricks.
Would you like a peanut?
I did actually just watch a show where somebody was taking out the peanut. Must be the almond cookies.
Yep.
Oh, she put it on the cookies just like powdered
no.
sugar.
No. No, she put it in the red teacup that she served to herself.
And
he
didn't
insisted. He insisted
yes.
that he take from her teacup because she was playing it cool, but, like, acting like she was being really sus, okay? Like, purposely not drinking her tea or eating the cookies to make him suspicious.
Right.
Oh, she's
so, that
so smart.
He took, yeah, that's what I was saying earlier, red teacup. She poured it into the red cup. The other cup was the white cup. She served him the white cup. kiss before. It's just the creepiest ending I've ever seen. He's dying and just stroking her hair. And
is she just like, oh, yuck foo? Another one from
the
backyard.
End. Yeah.
Boy,
well,
those
she's got to wait until her boyfriend doesn't have pneumonia.
All the fertilizer.
Yeah. So that's the end of the movie. For not seeing any sort of real violence or anything, having like four murders in it. Five if you include the animal abuse, torture, and death. Yeah.
Gordon.
There's like, yes, Gordon. There's no actual violence in the movie. It's all just implied, but it just gets under your skin. Ugh. And so the argument that Carl and I were having is, I say that she is not responsible for any of the deaths in the movie. And Carl, your feelings?
Well, I tell you what, she knew. She knew how it, Martin Sheen so well, that she played it perfectly. And if she played it perfectly, she would survive. So she knew. So my argument is, yes, he is responsible for his death, even though he switched cups. Because she knew he would switch cups.
Well, see, I believe that. But you know what? My argument here goes that, yes, she put the poison in the cup intentionally, very much on purpose, knowing that he was probably going to do that. Now, here's the deal. Martin Sheen's character, Mr. Hallett, is the one who is responsible for his death. Even though it could be counted as a murder, he's responsible for it, because if he didn't already know what a shady fucking bastard he was being, trying to skeeve up on a little 13-year-old girl and give her a reason to possibly give him a cup of poisoned tea, that wouldn't have been a problem in the first place, and he could have just drank the cup of tea that was offered to him. He made the choice to go scheme on a 13-year-old girl, knowing that that's a bad thing to do, and that she's kind of smart, and that she probably killed his mom, and maybe killed her mom. So, yeah, he knew he was a bad dude. He knew he was doing the wrong thing. He knew that this girl had a reason to try and murder him. So, yeah, it's his fault. I'm sorry. Like,
Doc, it's your turn.
It is.
Morally speaking, she did the right thing. She did whatever it took to survive a fate worse than death, honestly, for this. This is a horrible, horrible thing could have happened. She did what she had to do. I feel that morally, and by how angry, judgmental I can be, I think she did just fine. Actually, I think she did a splendid job. And I personally feel that she is not fully responsible. Now, if you're looking by our actual laws that we have, oh boy, she's in trouble. That is,
yeah.
But this is in the 70s when, a lot of murders didn't get figured out. So we'll just roll that. But by my ethics and the way I feel, she kicked ass. She did what she had to do, and she got rid of a very bad person.
A few very bad people, because anybody who blatantly covers stuff up like that also deserves to be in the root cellar.
This is true.
Yeah.
But her death was accidental, though. I'm kind of hands-offing that one, because that was her own darn fault for reacting so badly and getting smacked in the head with a trapdoor.
Exactly.
Yep.
You can also understand how she probably reacted badly when she walked down into the storm cellar and saw a dead body down there.
Yeah.
That's why she freaked out. But I also say that's entirely her fault, because the girl warned him, don't do it. Don't do it.
And
Ren was like, don't come down there, please. This is
my house.
And I fully agree with you that she was covering all the heinous, evil things her son did to children. So, yeah, she should definitely be in the root cellar herself, too, but she kind of took care of that herself.
Exactly.
I actually have to say I grinned at that when I finally realized the relationship between those two. Put a big grin on my face.
No. She was the one that was covering up all his weird shit.
Fact that she got hit in the head and an axe made me smile. So I'm like, yes, you got what you deserved, you schmoo.
Right. And the only question I really had in it, and this is the one that's kind of up for debate, as we were talking earlier about, did she knowingly poison her mother? And I feel like at that point that she didn't knowingly. I don't think that she gave her the powder knowing that it was going to kill her.
Right.
I think that she probably thought it was legitimately some sort of sedative. But she was so brainwashed by Dad that we don't know. We don't know that part, but I, again, do not believe that she is responsible for her mother's death either.
This all brings stuff up. And that's one of the great things about this film, is because there's so many questions and it's morally dubious all around that you have to figure out where you stand in this. Right?
Yeah,
absolutely. What do you think?
And for me, as far as Mom's death, I mean, we know she had nothing. Well, we don't know for a fact, but as far as we can tell, she had nothing to do with Dad's death because she was planning for everything. But we also, with the Mom thing, it's, you know, she was trained her entire life by this crazy dude to do things like this. But even if she knowingly put that cyanide in her mother's drink, knowing that it was cyanide that was going to kill her, is it really her fault? She's fucking 13. She spent her entire life being brainwashed with this dude.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, how do you prosecute a 16-year-old child for sex crimes when you find out that they were trafficked at 8 years old?
Yeah.
It's one of those morally ambiguous, I know firmly where I stand on the issue, but people can bring up pros and cons of either side. And yeah, she did blatantly kill some people, but is it her fault? Is she responsible for it? I don't think so at all.
Again, it's a really good question. One can argue it just like we did for, a half hour yesterday?
At least.
Yeah.
And by what they mean by arguing is discussing a lot of laughter and friendship. Ah.
Oh, yeah. No, we yell at each other sometimes, too, but it's only because we're talking over each other.
There you go.
But okay, so Doc, you were the virgin here. What do you think?
You know, this is one of those weird movies to me that it oozes with just, it just gives you this like kind of sweaty, nasty, exploitative, oh my God, I can't believe I'm watching this, but you can't keep your eyes off it because it's not a train wreck type thing. It feels so sleazy, but there's like nothing in it that's like on the disgusting end of sleazy. It's very tame, to be honest, but it just makes you just go, ugh.
God, it makes you feel like you need to take a shower in the dark because even getting near any of your parts just feels gross.
Oh, yeah.
But nothing happened, and that's something that Carl and I talked about yesterday when we were discussing the show and what we were, you know, the movie is like, I told him, like, before I watched it, I had to have my notebook because I knew the subject matter and that there was going to be a lot of trigger warnings I was going to have to write down. I literally have two notes from this movie. In the beginning, right, when Jodie Foster says, "This is my house," and it's just chillingly beautiful. And the second note I have is 46 minutes in, Gordon, torture, and death. And that's it. That's it.
I'll be honest with you. I may have to track down the Blu-ray of this because I really liked it a lot. But because it did everything right.
You know, remember what we're doing here, okay? So this series is hidden gems of the 70s. And I grew up in the 70s. I saw this on HBO, and I was just blown the fuck away by this film. I think in many ways, I think her acting here is better than in Taxi Driver because it's less one note. Right?
Very nuanced performance.
How old was Jodie if she did Taxi Driver?
That's a good question. She was supposed to be 13 in Taxi Driver. And I think she was about that age.
Oh.
You know, once you get that.
Yeah,
seriously. And then she does this one? Oh, my God. It's scary. But that being said, it's non-exploitative in the way that it's presented, though it's a very, very much exploitative plot. And such okay, without a doubt.
It was very tastefully done.
And again, it deals with character. You mentioned the dialogue, Rachel, right from the beginning,
yes.
And the moments. That moment with her and Mario in the hospital. It's just heartbreaking. Or the shot of the empty hamster cage. There are things there that he does. And as I said before, the director, Nicholas Gessner, this is the only film that basically he's known for in the U.S. And it's unfortunate. And I've got to track some of his other stuff down because I got to see more now. Because I think this guy did an absolutely fantastic job. And as I said before, this is a film that Jodie Foster basically disowns. And I think that's a fucking mistake.
She totally Susan Sarandon'd this one. Sarandon didn't admit to being in Rocky Horror until like the 25th anniversary. And it's like, bitch, your name is in the title. We know it's you. But yeah, just apparently that's what Jodie did with this film. Just basically, nope, that never happened. Don't know what you're talking about.
I don't understand why, because she has so much power when she's on screen in this movie. How could you not? It's like she was the best part of this whole thing, and she carried every single scene. She took over every single scene.
There's not a moment that she's not in the scene in the movie.
Well, I mean, when Lady's picking crab apples, but yeah, that's the whole thing. Is I was telling Carl yesterday again when we were talking about this. Just I really got into the movie in that first scene when she's talking with Miss Hallett, and I know I keep saying it, but she's standing there in the living room, and not the part where she yells it, just where she very coldly says, "This is my house." And, I mean, I swear to God, thunder and lightning clapped in the background. I mean, it was just, I was there for it. And usually child actors don't have gravitas like that. But this whole movie, she just was a fucking force to be reckoned with. And that, harkens back to the earlier conversation where Carl was talking about it being such a gem, especially for the 70s, that there was somebody with a physical disability, and the disability wasn't a part of the movie. I mean, there was one line where, you know, Mr. Hallett says something about, oh, yeah, or do girls your age like to dance? I mean, he makes fun of them, but he's also been called Wop Dago, everything else in this movie. So it wasn't that they were making light of the disability and, you know, on purpose. Like, it was just...
No, not at all. Not at all.
Like,
and it's not a major plot point. The only other film I can think of where that's the case is Night of the Creeps, where you have a major character with a physical disability and it's not even really mentioned.
Well, and the thing that I get from this movie that I makes a hidden 70s gem for me is having a really intelligent, assertive, strong female lead, like a badass female lead. And yes, I know we had Pam Grier and all that, but that wasn't as believable because, you know, they're doing all these crazy, you know, superhero type exploitations and shit. Having a female character like that in a movie that doesn't take any shit, knows how to take care of themselves, I mean, that's still rare to this day.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
yeah,
I
she did need
with
help
you
from
because
a dude.
Pam Grier was completely believable to me at 14 years old, and I don't give a shit.
Yeah, but we don't know which 14-year-old brain of yours was believing the most in Pam Grier, so I'm just going to leave it at that.
Both of them. Both of them. The pink head and little head.
I knew you were going to say that. Both of them, of course.
Yeah. That's the ticket.
One quick question before we do... housekeeping. Can you name any other role where Martin Sheen was that despicable? Now, there's a couple you can consider.
For me, no.
How about you, Doc?
I got to admit, like, I've only seen him in a very few movies, Soul Taker being one of them. then the 90s, early 2000s version of Spawn. And that's about it. So I really don't have a card. I really don't have a card.
Well, there are two films, both from this era, one a little later. But Badlands, he basically plays Charles Starkweather, who is a serial killer and picks up Sissy Spacek. And they become these serial killers, and it's based on real people. The other one, now, come on, you've seen The Dead Zone, the movie. You must
have. I have not seen The Dead Zone in its entirety. I've seen a lot of it when it was on TV, but I've not seen, like, I want to say 60% of it I have not seen.
Okay, so he played the presidential candidate who is going to who's a complete asshole and going to destroy the world, and we, you know.
Okay.
And he plays. In fact, when we did Trump, and elected Trump, I said we just elected Martin Sheen from The Dead Zone. Seriously.
I wouldn't exactly disrespect Martin Sheen like that, but I know you're referring to his character and the movie. So.
Yeah. Okay, we just lost. Rachel, so we're going to end up here very quickly, and we're going to do some housekeeping. Okay, so Tuesday is still up in the air. What we're doing on Tuesday, I'm trying to reschedule a couple of things. I've got to talk to Rachel after the show and see what we want to do. Also. On Friday, this coming Friday, we're going to have a very special guest, a good friend of mine. He's a filmmaker, and we're going to do the ISF podcast on Friday. That's a week from yesterday. And that's with Joe Lemieux. We still have a number of things ready to go. And Rachel, you're back with us. Tell us what's happening on Wednesday.
Well, after my second rapture of the day, Jesus Christ, Blog Talk, work on this. Wednesday, I am so super stoked to finally get to tell you all. We've been talking about it, but our show is coming. Wednesday, I have a couple of amazing animators, one of which does a lot of graphic novels and comic books and is coming out with a new game on Kickstarter. It's called Outer Planet Panic. Charles Moisant. Oh, my husband from another mister, this man. Oh, anyway. And his partner, Philo Barnhart, who came to fame by being the animator who was responsible for Ariel in The Little Mermaid. Yes, Disney's The Little Mermaid. He also worked for Hanna-Barbera and a few other big-name animation companies, and they are going to come talk to us about all things animation. I will go ahead and throw this out here. I told Carl about it earlier, and he's got homework, but there is an episode of the new season of Love, Death, and Robots that I really want everybody to watch so that we can cover that. It's called Snow in the Desert. Holy shit. There's only certain parts you can tell it's animated. Only certain parts. But,
yeah, I mean, what they've done technically is just amazing. It truly is.
It is mind-blowing. So I'm really excited to be able to talk to these guys about, you know, what they've done, how they're doing, and where you guys can meet them here over the next year, because they've got a really full convention circuit coming up. So many possibilities to actually meet these dudes in the flesh. So... there was another one that we're working on. Did we talk about the pizza show?
Let's do a little bit of more work on Shadow Vision and everyone before we deal with that yet.
Okay. Well, not to be jumping on a bandwagon here, because I've actually had this project in the works for a while, and I haven't said anything too much about it, but... here in my hometown, we actually have a network of real-life superheroes, one of which is Shadow Vision. We're doing a series on him and some of his superhero buddies coming up here in the near future. And back over to you, Carl.
Okay, fair enough. We also have upcoming Tony Burgess coming, and Gary Kent is going to come back here in a little bit, and we'll be talking about Richard Rush and his films.
Tony Burgess, writer of the book series and movie Pontypool. So,
absolutely. So we have less than a minute. So I want to thank both of you for doing this and coming on the Commentary Watch. Rachel, you knocked it out of the park today, and I'm so glad you finally got a chance to see this, Doc, and how good this film really is. And
I'm so glad I got to talk to you again, Doc. I missed your face and voice.
I'll be back.
There's
something in the works. There's something in the works.
All right, folks. So we've got 15 seconds less. So let's just say good night, everyone. And we'll see you next
week.
Everybody. Next week, we'll be doing 200 Motels by Frank Zappa. All right? So there you go.
Sometimes.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Love your faces, folks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.